From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, we're going to talk about your soul. Here's what's happening. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is expected to authorize Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for young adults aged 12 and older by next week, according to a federal official, a person very familiar with the process, setting up shots for many before the beginning of the next school year. In Washington, D.C., the mayor there is banning dancing at weddings. Everyone's saying this is insane. It's all because of COVID-19. In Los Angeles County has reported no deaths from COVID-19 Sunday and Monday, a stunning turnaround for California's most populous district, which has suffered 23,915 fatalities since the pandemic began. It's the first time in 410 days that the county has not reported at least one COVID fatality. Gas prices continue to increase all around the country. In Southern California, the ninth day in a row, gasoline is over $5 a gallon in some areas. Wow. Looking at your phone makes other people nearby do the same in less than a minute, according to a new study. Researchers in Italy investigated human mini-cry, or the chameleon effect, as they call it, subconsciously replicating the physical actions of another human. Out of 184 people, half of them replicated the action of touching and looking 30 seconds after a subconscious trigger, according to researchers. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on all these matters, with us. That's kind of interesting. Somebody looks at a phone, and then later somebody else looks at theirs. Yeah. How come?
I don't think it really has anything to do with the phones, per se. I think it's more likely just another example of our primate-based monkey-see, monkey-do mimicry in social groups. It's the so-called chameleon effect. And when you think about it, there's all kinds of other circumstances where people do the same thing, right? One person looks at their watch, other people look at their watches, one person yawns, everybody else starts yawning. This seems to be an evolved compulsion to fit into social groups by replicating other members' behavior in some situations. So it's logical that as our technology changes and the sorts of things that people can mimic changes, one year it's watches, the next year it's smartphones. Who knows what it'll be the year after that. But, it is kind of interesting. Of course, when you go into a waiting room anywhere now, everybody's staring at their cell phone.
All over the place.
Everywhere, and probably not necessarily doing really important things, but at least it keeps people busy, right?
I saw somebody jogging yesterday looking at their cell phone, and they ran into a pool.
Yeah, well, there have been people horrendously injured, and I believe deaths also, caused by people who lost their, what we would call situational awareness, right?
Yep.
From holding their phones. So much attention was put to people driving while holding phones. And it turns out that walking, holding a phone and staring into a phone can be just as hazardous for that person or other people that they walk into. But this is, should seem like kind of common sense stuff, right? But people get so involved in reading whatever it is they're reading. I see it all the time. People just walking, pushing strollers and walking dogs, and they don't seem to be looking up at all. So I guess it's a game of odds from a safety standpoint.
Absolutely. Lauren, thanks. We'll talk to you next week. There is currently no technology on planet Earth that could stop a massive asteroid from wiping out Europe, according to a simulation of studies carried out by leading space agencies. A week-long exercise led by NASA concluded that a catastrophe would be unavoidable, even given 6 months to prepare. The hypothetical impact scenario, which took place during a planetary defense conference hosted by the United Nations, proved that governments are woefully unprepared for this kind of disaster. Well, that's not good news, is it? What else is going on in the skies, though? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hello, Stephen.
Hello there, George. We always begin with space and proudly talking about May 5th. This marks the 60th anniversary since the U.S. saw its first astronaut launch, as Alan Shepard was launched on a suborbital flight, George, reaching an altitude of some 100 miles above the Earth. His was only a 15-minute flight, but he was the first, of course, to pilot a spacecraft. and he once commented that his spacecraft was built simply by the lowest bidder. Yuri Gagarin's spacecraft was actually pre-programmed. But, George, more interesting space news. We go to Mars, of course, with the Ingenuity helicopter. It's now completed 4 flights, absolutely spectacular, and will now be given a new mission. It moves on from a technology demonstrator to an operations demonstrator. And this will be, of course, something that they're going to be doing, NASA and the team there at JPL, for the next 30 sols, or simply the next 31 Earth days. Ingenuity, by the way, George, will focus on aerial observations of scientific targets not visible by the Perseverance rover's cameras. More exciting stuff. Astronomy gets the next billing here. The nearest star, George, to the sun is the small red dwarf star Proxima Centauri, located about 4.2465 light years away from us, discovered back in 1915. And it's thought to have one of the nearest potential habitable planets in the now-known universe, located in that famous, what, George, the habitable zone. This object is simply known as Proxima Centauri B. But hopes now look low for Proxima Centauri B as being anything but habitable, as the primary star, Proxima Centauri, has now blasted out another massive flare, which would be quite destructive to life as we know it today. And back in October of 2020, George, something even stranger. A radio signal was detected coming from this area and that particular star at 982 megahertz. Maybe that was a warning for those that may have even inhabited that particular planet, or just a message to tell us that they're out there. We begin, of course, as I'd say, we end with the live sky. May skies, George, exciting week for observers because this is the peak of the Eta Aquarius meteor shower, set for the morning of May the 5th. Look into the southeast sky starting around 3 a.m. with clear skies, a little bit of moonlight. You may see 10 meteors per hour from dark skies. What's all this? All debris from Halley's Comet. In May for planets, George, we have Venus and Mercury. They, of course, return slowly to the western sky after sunset. Jupiter and Saturn putting on a good show, all in the northeast sky at dawn. But, George, the big event for the western U.S. will be the total lunar eclipse of the morning of May the 26th, and we'll be talking about over the next few weeks. Email me always at drskyshow@gmail.com. And, George, here's a great new website that I actually found out there for the listeners and for yourself. You're interested in looking and observing many of the space debris that's up there, including a lot of junk, just go to do this. Google Astria, A-S-T-R-I-A, graph, like a graph, G-R-A-P-H.com. George, it's spectacular. People will be excited about it. You'll see just how much stuff orbits the Earth. Naturally, keep your eyes to the skies. Proud to be your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you.
Dr. Sky, we'll talk to you next week, my friend. Thanks for your report. Up next, Metabolical, the lure and the lies of processed food, nutrition, and modern medicine. Dr. Robert Lustig back with us on Coast to Coast, and that is next. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dr. Robert Lustig is a professor of pediatrics in the Division of Endocrinology at the University of California, San Francisco, director of the Weight Assessment for Teen and Child Health Programs at the USCF, and specializes in neuroendocrinology and childhood obesity. He grew up in Brooklyn, New York, attended a high school in Manhattan. He obtained a bachelor's degree from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, his MD from Cornell University's Medical College back in 1980. He came to the public attention back in 2009 when one of his medical lectures, Sugar, the Bitter Truth, went viral on YouTube. A couple of his books include Fat Chance and also Metabolical, which we're talking about tonight. Robert, welcome back to the program.
For having me back, George.
My pleasure. How are you? You weathering COVID out there and everything fine?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, we just had our book launch party yesterday. You know, humans, you know, in proximity with each other in a beautiful setting, and it was our quote coming out party.
Good.
And so I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Good thing you're not in Washington D.C. You are not allowed to dance anymore.
Well, we did better than that yesterday.
That's good. Let's talk about processed food for a moment, and also modern medicine. What do you think of modern medicine? Do you think it's doing the right thing?
Well, modern medicine, there are two parts. There's acute medicine, and then there's chronic medicine for acute diseases and chronic diseases. And I think we've actually done a pretty good job with acute diseases, things, you know, like surgeries and antibiotics in general. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now we're seeing lots of antibiotic resistance. Chronic disease is a whole nother story. So what we're talking about today are the diseases that constitute metabolic syndrome. They are type 2 diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, fatty liver disease, polycystic ovarian disease. These diseases constitute 75% of healthcare dollars today.
Wow.
And when
huge.
You think about each of those diseases, none of them have a cure.
And what creates these diseases? Why, I mean, why do they happen?
That's what metabolical is all about. So it's assumed that there are medicines for each of these diseases. Okay, so high LDL, you got statins. High blood pressure, you got antihypertensives. High blood glucose, you got insulin and oral hypoglycemics, et cetera, et cetera. Fact of the matter is, these medicines are treating the symptoms of the disease. They are not treating the disease itself, because the disease is actually inside the cells and you can't get to it. So when you treat a symptom, you may feel better, but you haven't actually fixed the problem. It's like giving an aspirin to a patient with a brain tumor who mm-hmm. have a headache. So what are the real diseases? Well, the real diseases are 8 subcellular pathologies that exist inside each of our cells. There's no ICD-11 code for any of them. Doctors never mention them because they don't have any treatment for them. So these are unknown to the general public. But these are actually what are causing these diseases, and there's no medicine for them. There is no pill for this.
Is there food?
There never will be a pill for this.
Is there food for it? A supplementation?
And that's why I wrote the book. So let me name the 8 subcellular pathologies.
I call
it the hateful or the grateful 8.
And this is for everybody.
This is for everybody.
Okay.
So when these 8 processes going on inside your cell are working right, you'll be 110 playing tennis. And when they're working wrong, you'll be in your wheelchair with 2 stumps at age 40 on dialysis waiting for your next stroke.
Wow.
Those are your choices. And the question is, what's going on and what do you do about it? So here are the 8. 1, glycation. This is when a glucose or a fructose molecule binds to a protein. And this happens in your cells automatically all the time. This is the Maillard reaction. This is the aging reaction. This is the browning reaction. This is why you paint barbecue sauce on your ribs before you put them on the grill to get that nice caramel color.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all caramelizing all the time. And if you drank orange juice this morning, you are caramelizing 7 times faster.
Wow.
Number 2, oxidative stress. So this is basically rusting. This is what nails do. Well, it happens to cells also. Oxygen radicals damage lipids, damage proteins. This is the reason why we have antioxidants in our cells, in order to try to quench those oxygen radicals. The problem is, if you don't have enough antioxidants, you don't quench them, and you get cell damage, and then you get cell death, and then you get human death.
Okay.
Number 3, mitochondrial dysfunction. So the mitochondria are like little energy-burning factories inside each of your cells. Imagine you had a old-style factory that ran on coal. So you'd have the coal coming in on coal cars, you know, on railroad tracks, and you'd have stokers, you know, that would be shoveling it out and stoking the furnace. And when the amount of coal coming in equaled the speed of the stokers feeding that furnace, then that factory would be at optimal capacity. But what if some of those stokers got sick? What if they got COVID-19? What if all of a sudden they weren't there to mm-hmm. stoke the coal? And what if those railroad cars started coming a little faster and a little faster? And eventually they would end up blocking off the entire factory, choking it off, and the factory would actually shut down. That is mitochondrial dysfunction.
It couldn't handle the load.
Can't handle the load. And that's exactly what happens in mitochondrial dysfunction. It can't handle the load. Number 4, insulin resistance. So this insulin, as you know, is the energy storage hormone. It acts on your liver. And when your liver is sick, that makes your pancreas have to make more insulin. That raises insulin levels all over the body, which means there's more insulin at the fat cell, and that causes you to gain weight. And it also causes cell division, like in your coronary arteries, to block your coronary arteries. And it also drives cancer growth. Number six, inflammation. So obviously, inflammation is always bad when it's out of control. But it's, you know, it's a necessary part of your body. Otherwise, you'd be eaten by the maggots. But when it's overdone, then it can damage cells. And the problem is we are now under constant inflammation because of our gut, because our gut is not able to fend off the bacteria that are inside it, because the good bacteria, which used to battle the bad bacteria, have now been lost because of our current crappy diet. Number seven. Methylation. So this actually affects the DNA, and methyl groups get added, and now the DNA doesn't get transcribed or translated properly, and so cells become dysfunctional. And this can actually be passed on from mother to child to grandchild to great-grandchild. So what your grandmother ate affects your disease today.
Interesting.
And number eight, my favorite, autophagy. So this is like garbage night for the cell. This is the time when your cells get rid of all of the junk that's accumulated over the course of the day. So protein aggregates, dysfunctional mitochondria, defective membranes, etc. These all have to be cleared out in order for the cell to run efficiently. This is actually the reason you sleep, is to get rid of all the junk that's accumulated in the brain over the course of the day. And what happens is that there are waves of cerebrospinal fluid that come in while you're sleeping because the intracranial pressure's gone down. They're called glymphatics, and they carry away all the junk so that your brain can actually function properly the next day. So these eight processes, turns out none of them have a drug. They're all foodable. They're not druggable. Unfortunately, they're only foodable if you eat the right food.
Interesting.
If you eat the wrong food, it's poison.
Can you supplement to take care of these two?
Well, some of them will respond to supplements, like, for instance, antioxidants for oxidative stress. But in general, supplements are really not very effective. They don't get to where they need to go. Where they need to go is the mitochondria. And for the most part, supplements really don't even enter most of our cells. They never even clear the intestinal barrier. So for the, you know, for the majority of supplements, usually they're just, you know, marketing.
Interesting take. Now, if you can take care of all eight of these situations, you'll live a longer life?
Absolutely. And we have the data to show it. There's a host of data. Basically, the way to figure out whether you're going to die or not is to look at your telomeres. These are the ends of your chromosomes. And they unravel, kind of like they're like the aglets on your shoelaces. All right? So as long as those plastic aglets are functional and, you know, full, you know, your shoelaces will basically, you know, last till they break. But if those aglets start wearing down for any reason, shoelaces will unravel. Well, the same thing happens to your chromosomes, and ultimately when that happens, that's cell death, and then it's human death. And we and others have shown, my colleague Dr. Alyssa Eppel here at UCSF has shown that telomere length is the marker, is the biomarker of cellular and ultimately organismal aging. And processed food drives that telomere shortening.
We're talking with Dr. Robert Lustig. His latest book, Metabolical. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Robert, when we come back after the break, I want to talk about nutrition and also processed foods. You hate processed foods, don't you?
You're damn right I do, and for good reason.
What is it about the processed food? Is it the nitrates in it?
No, it's two things. High sugar, low fiber. High sugar for palatability, low fiber for shelf life. It's what the food industry does in order to be able to basically sell virtually anything. And sugar covers up all the other tastes. It covers up salty, like honey roasted peanuts.
Sure,
it covers up bitter, like milk chocolate. It covers up sour, like lemon. lemonade. It covers up umami, like sweet and sour pork. Basically, you can make dog poop taste good with enough sugar.
All right, stay with us. Robert, we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take calls next hour with Dr. Robert Lustig as we talk about Metabolical, the lure and lies of processed food, nutrition, and modern medicine. So get ready to make the calls. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Dr. Robert Lustig as we talk about your nutrition and keeping you alive. Doc, let's get right into some of this again. We were talking about processed foods, and on a 1 to 10, with 10 being the worst, how bad is a processed food system?
Well, first of all, there are different levels of processing. My colleague, Dr. Carlos Montero, down in Sao Paulo, Brazil, developed a classification system. So think of it this way. Class 1 would be an apple coming right out of the ground.
Okay.
Class 2 would be apple slices, mechanically dispersed. Class 3 would be, say, apple sauce, where it's been pulverized and possibly some sugar has been added.
Mm-hmm.
And class 4 would be an apple drink, where the fiber has been removed and all sorts of other things have been added, too. So different levels of processing. What the data show is it's that class 4, that ultra-processed food category, where different foods have been added together that never existed in nature, usually more than 5 ingredients at a time. That's the class that causes disease. The other three, not so much, but that class 4, that's where all the disease is hiding.
What about something like salami or something like that?
So salami is a processed food also. It has nitrates, which cause colon cancer. It's not as bad from a metabolic standpoint, but it is problematic from a cancer standpoint. And, you know, if you die of cancer, it's, you know, just as bad as if you die from heart disease.
Absolutely.
So it's still an issue.
Jeez. So nutrition has a lot to do with fighting off all these problems.
Absolutely. It has everything to do with fighting off these problems. Basically, here's what you need to know whether or not a food is healthy. You know, the FDA, the USDA, they all have different definitions of what is healthy. I'm going to give you a new definition of what is healthy, and I explain in the book exactly why this works and the empiric evidence support it. Two things, two precepts, 6 words. Protect the liver, feed the gut.
Uh-huh.
Protect the liver from the onslaught of sugars, of omega-6 fatty acids, of iron, of glyphosate, of heavy metals, branched-chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, valine, trans fats. Feed the gut. Feed the gut what? Well, turns out they like fiber. They like soluble and insoluble fiber. And that is what's been taken out of processed food because you can't freeze fiber. Try it. Take an orange, put it in your freezer, take it out the next day, put it on your kitchen counter, try to eat it, see what you get. You get mush. Why? The ice crystals macerate the cell wall, allow all the water to rush in. Hey, food industry knows that. What do? Squeeze it and freeze it. Now it lasts forever. Now it's frozen concentrated orange juice. Now they can sell it on the commodities market because it's storable food. No depreciation. They make boatloads of money. And guess what? You get sick.
Some people aren't getting COVID. They're not vaccinated, and they're just not getting COVID.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, I'm one of them. What are we doing?
Well, one thing is, the NIH and the CDC have appropriately identified masking, hand washing, and social distancing. All correct. They have missed the fourth thing, the fourth leg of the stool, the food. So there are 3 groups, aside from the elderly, there are 3 demographic groups that have increased morbidity and mortality with relation to COVID. Number 1, people of color. Number 2, the obese. Number 3, pre-existing conditions, all these diseases of metabolic syndrome we've been talking about. And what do those 3 share in common? Ultra-processed food consumption. So why does ultra-processed food lead to COVID morbidity and mortality? 3 reasons. Number 1, the insulin, the high insulin from the insulin resistance. Insulin increases the expression of the receptor on your cells called ACE2, which is what the COVID virus uses as the portal for injecting its RNA to take over your cell. More ACE2s, more chance for morbidity and mortality. Number two, soluble fiber, I mentioned, is metabolized by your colonic bacteria into short-chain fatty acids, butyrate, propionate. These are immune suppressive. They keep the cytokine levels down, and so you don't overwhelm your immune system, and you can actually withstand being infected with COVID to a mild degree. And then finally, number three, diabetes. High blood glucose causes, crystallizes around that ACE2 opening and allows that virus to inject even greater amounts. So the three things that processed food does are the three things that cause COVID to increase. So chronic disease increases your risk for acute disease.
What would you say the single worst thing that processed food has done to our food?
Well, to be honest with you, it's done a lot of things, but I think the single worst thing that it has done is it has caused this massive increase in dementia. You know, Alzheimer's disease used to be relatively rare. When I was in pathology class as a second-year med student in 1978, Alzheimer's disease was so rare that there was one paragraph in the pathology text about it. We had the only cadaver with Alzheimer's disease in the entire class. And I even did a, you know, term paper on it. And now Alzheimer's disease is 20% of all people who reach age 65. So the question is, where did that
That's
come
huge.
From? And the answer is, it's the insulin resistance at the level of the brain. It's mitochondrial dysfunction at the level of the brain. And when you fix that, when you fix the food, you can actually improve cognition. You can actually reverse some of the cognitive decline. My colleague, Dr. Dale Bredesen, who was at my book party just yesterday, and we were discussing this, has new data, and he's going to be publishing it shortly. He wrote the book, The End of Alzheimer's, and, you know, it's all about the food. It's all about the food.
We're with Dr. Robert Lustig. Doc, when I was born, I was about 6 pounds, 6 ounces. Now a lot of kids are 8 pounds, 9 pounds, 10 pounds. Why have they gotten bigger?
So, in fact, four separate studies, U.S., South Africa, Israel, Russia, we now, newborns now weigh 200 grams, a half a pound more on average than they did 25 years ago. And people say, well, that's better nutrition. No, it's not. It's because of fetal insulin resistance. It's because the sugar crosses the placenta and causes liver fat in the fetus, driving increased insulin, therefore increasing the amount of liver fat and body fat as well. And we have the DEXA data, we have the liver ultrasound data in newborns to show that these kids are born sick.
Interesting. That's fascinating studies.
Yeah, it's and you know what? If you're born sick, you stay sick.
Remember that old song, just a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down?
Yeah, it also makes the blood pressure go up.
How bad is sugar anyway?
It's pretty bad. It wasn't the worst thing in our diet. Trans fats were the worst thing, but we finally figured that out. It only took 25 years for the FDA to finally get rid of them.
After everybody got clogged arteries and stuff like that.
Absolutely. You know, we first realized the trans fats were an issue in 1988. And actually, Fred Kummerow knew it in 1957, and he was suppressed by the food industry. So we got the first real data in 1988, and it wasn't until 2013 that the FDA finally banned trans fats from our diet. So trans fats were the worst. Now sugar is.
Losing weight, how important is that for people?
So losing weight makes everybody happy, right? Except your liver. Ultimately, it's what's going on in your liver that matters. Now, sometimes losing weight will cause some liver fat loss, too. I'm not saying that losing weight is bad. It's not bad at all. It's good. But ultimately, it's the loss of the liver fat that matters. We did a study at UCSF where we gave 43 kids with metabolic diet with very low sugar and substituted with high starch. We did a starch for sugar exchange. These kids didn't lose any weight on purpose. We gave them a scale, and every day, if they lost weight, we'd say, eat more, in order to keep their weight constant.
Right.
But we took the sugar out of their diet. We took the pastries out. We put the bagels in. We took the sweetened yogurt out. We put the baked potato chips in. We took the chicken teriyaki out. We put the turkey hot dogs in. Okay, so we didn't give them good food. We gave them lousy food. We gave them ultra-processed food. We gave them kid food, food kids would eat, but it was no added sugar food. Every single aspect of their metabolic health improved in 10 days flat.
That's amazing.
And their insulin secretion came back to normal. In other words, we reversed their propensity for diabetes in 10 days.
That's
no change in calories.
That's dramatic as all get up. My gosh.
Yeah, well, that's why we needed to write the book.
You know, dentists used to campaign about sugar. I don't think I've seen an anti-sugar campaign from the Dental Association in years.
Well, once upon a time, the dentists were the original anti-sugar advocates. They knew back in the 1930s because of their hero, Dr. Weston Price, who knew this, you know, and basically promulgated this amongst all the dentists. But the dentists were very worried when fluoride came along, because fluoride reduced the prevalence of dental caries to cavities by about 30 to 40%, and the dentist started thinking, well, gee, who's going to fill the seats? And they started giving out lollipops. The dentists lost their way.
Wow.
They're now coming back on board because now they have cover from the doctors, because we now understand just what an enemy sugar is to our health.
So what would you recommend? What would you recommend, Robert, as an overall package to an individual if they wanted to start on some kind of program?
If
what
they
would
don't
you
need to start on a program.
They do not.
All they need to do is eat real food. So how do you know what's real food?
That's my next question.
If Cheetos is real food, then you got a problem. All right? It's very simple. If a food has a label, it's a warning label. It means something's been done to the food. It's not what's in the food that matters. It's what's been done to the food.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, people thought you are what you eat. When I wrote my first book, Fat Chance, back in 2013, I rephrased it. I said, you are what you do with what you eat, emphasizing the metabolism that goes on inside the body. But you know what? I got it wrong, too. In this book, Metabolical, I rephrase it yet again. You are what they did with what you eat.
What have you seen in your career that got you to start thinking the way you're thinking now?
Well, you know, I've been interested in how the brain controls hormones and how hormones control the brain for my entire career. Obesity was sort of the final frontier. In 1994, we discovered this hormone called leptin. And leptin is this hormone that's made by your fat cells, goes to your brain and says, you know what? I've got enough energy on board. I don't need to eat that second piece of chocolate cake. It is sort of the thermostat, the servo mechanism on your brain to tell your brain you don't have to keep, you know, consuming. So when your leptin is working right, all is well, and you stay metabolically stable and usually weight stable.
Mm-hmm.
However, when your leptin is working wrong, your brain sees starvation. It thinks there's not enough fat on your bones, and therefore it ratchets up all of the phenomena, including increased appetite, decreased expenditure. You know, you start sitting on the couch and eating Doritos in an attempt to try to raise your leptin. And the problem is, if your leptin's not working, your leptin can keep going up and going up, and you know what? You're still going to be hungry. And that's what we have today. We have this phenomenon called leptin resistance. The question is, what causes it? The work that I did back in the 1990s and 2000s showed that insulin, the hormone insulin, the energy storage hormone, was also the blocker of leptin signaling. And doesn't that make sense? Because after all, wouldn't it, you expect that the hormone that would cause the energy to be stored would also be the hormone that tells your brain to eat more to get more energy stored? So that understanding then asked the question, okay, what's wrong with the insulin? And in 2006, it became obvious. Kids were getting the diseases of alcohol without alcohol. Type 2 diabetes and fatty liver disease had never been seen in children, but those were the diseases of alcohol until 1980. And now they are the diseases of children, but children don't drink alcohol. But boy, oh boy, do they consume sugar. And it makes sense because, after all, alcohol and sugar are metabolized virtually identically in the liver. And we call it wine. I mean, for wine, the yeast does the first step of metabolism called glycolysis. For sugar, we do our own first step. But after that, the mitochondria are overwhelmed. That mitochondrial dysfunction we talked about before, that's your insulin resistance. Now you've got hyperinsulinemia. Now you've got chronic disease, and you're off to the races.
I saw a movie yesterday with the late actor Patrick Swayze, who died of liver and pancreatic cancer. A great actor, and I liked him. He did a good job. We came close to getting him on the show. Yeah, all those things. But what causes pancreatic cancer?
Well, we don't know. We don't know what causes it, but we know how it grows. Turns out pancreatic cancer has a special enzyme called transketolase, and it takes fructose, the sweet molecule in sugar, and turns it into glucose just in the pancreas. So sugar is feeding pancreatic cancer in a big way. The very few patients who have survived pancreatic cancer all had to, went on a ketogenic diet.
And that's where your insulin's made, too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The pancreas?
Yeah. It's a double whammy, without question.
Interesting take of that. We're going to take calls with you next hour, Robert. The book, Metabolical, where can people get it?
It's in your local bookstore. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Anywhere they sell books, you can find it.
What does the food industry say about you?
What do you think they say?
Yeah, we can't repeat it.
They would like me to go away. They have, tried to discredit me at many, many levels. Ultimately, I'm still standing because the science is my sword and my shield.
All right. Well, you stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. Robert's website, which is his name, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The book we're talking about tonight is called Metabolical, The Lure and the Lies of Processed Food, Nutrition, and Modern Medicine. Up next, your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.